Okay, we're 2 weeks into our new year. How many of you are up on your daily Bible reading? Great. I haven't taken account recently, but somewhere around 125 folks who have agreed to read our Bibles through this year, and hope that you'll stay at least up or preferably slightly ahead. That makes it a little bit easier. We also miss our young folks today. They're on a weekend retreat, so about 50 folks are out there. And I just knew that the first service, because there's something happening about 12 o'clock today, was going to be just overwhelmingly overflowing. But we're glad that you're here. And we're in a series of lessons. This is going to be the last one, and it's going to be the last one for personal reasons, because I tend to get a little bit carried away with some things, and this is one of those things that I do tend to get a little bit carried away in studying, because I enjoy it, but I also don't think it's a good thing to stay away from textual studies for too long. And so just because I know that I tend to continue to get more and more into something, then I'm going to call this the last lesson. Have you ever found yourself at odds with the way that someone, perhaps even a friend, may feel and see things considerably differently than you do? As many of you know, Bill Malone, Tennessee Bill, has been taking flying lessons. And at 80-plus years, that's a pretty remarkable thing. And I would like to publicly congratulate him on recently completing his first solo flight. He said he touched down four times and got back up and with no damage to the plane. So, however, due to his inexperience, he has experienced some difficulty in getting folks to go up with him. Well, at least there's always at least one exception to every rule. You with me? You see? I'll not name who, but anyway, Bill asked me to go flying with him the other day, and sensing a little bit of hesitation on my part, he said, "Well, Ken, you're a Christian, aren't you? A man of faith." I said, "Yes, sir." "You believe God's in complete control of things in this life, don't you?" "Well, yes, sir, I do." He said, "You don't believe God's going to let you die before your time, before your number comes up, do you?" And I thought about that a minute, and I said, "Well, Brother Bill, what if I'm up there with you and your number comes up?" Now, for the record, that is not a true story, okay? The last part of it, it's not, okay? That's an old joke that was kind of attuned to the circumstances. But how we think and how we view things, our reality is shaped by the filter through which we view life. Our particular filter forms a framework through which we... It determines how we think about things, how we view things, how we interpret things in our environment. And we all have different, because of our backgrounds, we have different filters through which we view life. And so I want to investigate a little bit about events which shaped the filters that various ones of us have. Let me give you a couple of examples. To illustrate the difference in the way that we view things, do you think that money is for spending or for saving? Which one of them gives you the most pleasure, to save it or to spend it? Well, either end of this spectrum you're on, you don't understand the other end of it. It doesn't make very much sense to you. And do you understand how very different the lives of those who differ on this one single subject are? Particularly if you marry somebody who's of the other philosophy than you are. Then that has been known to be the source of great difficulties in marriages. I have a friend who told me years ago, and he told me very honestly, my goal in life is to owe $1 million. He made it. Very much to his sorrow, he made it. Because not too long after he owed that money, then the way that he made money took a serious downturn. And so he found himself in dire straits in his life. And suffice it to say, that's not the way that I think. I've never had the desire to owe $1 million. A promising young person is tragically killed in an automobile accident. And a Muslim says it was the will of Allah. A Hindu would say it's the karma of former lives that's caught up with him. A pragmatist would say the brakes failed. We could talk for a long time about how we view things differently in our lives, but for this lesson, I'd like to investigate at least a little bit of why some of us think so differently than others of us. And the benefit that I see of these lessons, these three lessons, this will be the third, is number one, to at least have some appreciation. I don't expect you to agree with people whose philosophy of life is radically different than your own. You probably won't get there. But it will help you, if you're willing to understand and appreciate how we might be able to reach out to different segments of our society more effectively than we have in the past. For instance, when I was young, my dad was a gospel preacher, and we would go into communities and pitch a tent, literally, and have a gospel meeting. And everybody in the community would come, and the tent would be overflowing, and you'd put sawdust on the floor and have these little folding chairs, and, you know, you'd fight the bugs and, you know, sweat. And, well, if you were to come into this community and pitch a tent and say we're going to have a gospel meeting, how would that fly? Wouldn't go so well, would it? And so if we keep doing the same thing, something may be effective for one period of time when it's not effective for another period of time. And if there ever was a time in the history of the world when ways to communicate with people are changing, this is it. I mean, we're in the middle of it, aren't we? And so it will help us be more effective, hopefully, in reaching out to others in our community and society. And also, it will help us gain an appreciation for our brothers and sisters who think differently than we do. And it will help us, if not agree with them, it will help us more easily accept them without impugning their motives. Because when people think differently than I do, I tend to impugn their motives and say, well, the reason that they think that way is this, and it's usually not very good. And so hopefully it will help us a little bit at least gain an appreciation for our brothers and sisters who think differently than we do. If you'd like to pursue this further, let me quickly recommend a couple of books, and you can come up to me afterward. Or actually, how about if I don't, and you can come up to me, and I'll give you a couple of books that you can pursue this further if you would like to. Sociologists believe that events that we experience between the ages of 13 and 22 develop a framework through which we view life, and it develops our beliefs for the rest of our life. And so that period of time between 13, when we begin to start making some decisions on our own, and 22, when we have become adults, is a really important time in our life. Sociologists believe that a framework has been developed during that time. And we tend to hold these views and beliefs until and unless something comes along to convince us that our views, our framework, is either inaccurate or inadequate. And even then, there are some of us who are presented with evidence that should teach us that our framework is either inaccurate or inadequate, and we still hold it because we just like it. It's the way we think. It's the way that I am. We become content with it, and we become defensive about it for the rest of our life. But if we desire to, then things happen in our life, and we are encountered with things that cause us to at least tweak our our filter, the way we view things, the way that we think about things. And there are terms that have been given to each generation that is alive at any given time. And in our generations, today's generations are commonly called strivers, challengers, calculators, and millennials. Now, I'm not going to go through all of those, even though I personally find it extremely fascinating to go back and to spend lots of time on each one of these. There is a, if a sociologist wants to contrast the people that are alive today into two categories, it's usually Generation X and Generation Y. And there are things that they will contrast about those two generations. If you're more than 70 years old, here are some of the things that, which will affect your worldview and your beliefs. Your life and your thinking was dominated during those years of 13 to 22 by the war. Meaning, as Archie Bunker says, the war. World War II. Massive efforts to survive against overwhelming odds. During the years of 1929 and 1931, stock losses alone topped $50 billion. Now, if you put that into today's dollars, it's numbers that's beyond belief. Over 1,000 banks failed. By 1932, more than 12 million persons were out of work. And this caused this generation to have a very deep appreciation for the privilege of having a job. You catch that? The privilege of having a job. And they felt an allegiance to whatever company or whatever individual gave them a job. More than 2,300 persons were killed on the Japanese attack of Pearl Harbor. German bombs killed 70,000 British civilians. Some 18 million members of the armed services were killed in World War II. In all, 45 million persons lost their life in World War II. It was a different world. Families at home lived in fear of getting the letter edged in black, meaning that their service person had died in combat. You recall, if you're 70 years or older, you recall the rationing, the massive mobilization of all the nation's resources, the total commitment, the Liberty Gardens, loyalty to country and flag. No one would have dared burn a flag or say anything disrespectful about it. You remember respect for authority, a serious work ethic. Waste not, want not became your mantra. Saving for a rainy day became ingrained in your way of thinking. Hard work together and working together were core values. And in your mind, that's what comprised the American way of life. You're inspired by examples of sacrifice and family honor and respectability. Russell Baker's autobiography entitled Growing Up, he relates an incident during his childhood years of the Depression and how he was inspired by his widowed mother's example and admonitions to make something of himself in a world that offered very few opportunities educationally and even meager resources. He related how that he and his mother on one particular cold winter's day were pulling a wagon that was loaded with some food that they had received from, of all places, welfare office. And how that on the way home, they took their coats off in freezing, below freezing weather to cover the goods in that wagon so that the neighbors wouldn't see those goods that they had accepted welfare in order not to to compromise the respectability of the family. The Fighting Sullivans was a 1944 movie that chronicled the actual life in the late Depression, World War II experiences of an Irish Catholic family. Five sons, all enlisted in the military, in the Navy, following the attack on Pearl Harbor. But they enlisted only after the Navy agreed that they could all serve on the same ship. The father mortgages his home to pay off all of the sons' indebtedness before they go off to the military. A year later, An officer arrives at their door with the tragic news that all five sons have been killed when their ship exploded and sunk. It later comes to light that four of the brothers refused to abandon the ship when they could have because one of their brothers was in sick bay. And so the ship went down and all five sons died. The father controls his grief and he goes off to work as a freight conductor saying, "I've never missed a day of work in 30 years. The mother controls her grief to make coffee for the officer who's brought the news. Does that sound like people you know? Even in the post-war years of affluence, they get no pleasure from spending money. They save everything. Save rubber bands into a ball. Pick up pieces of string and save it. Now, in case it's not evident to you, regardless of how right you may feel that is, if you're over 70 years old, then you probably realize that not everybody thinks that way today. In fact, many of your own children have not accepted that same philosophy of life. If you're between the ages of 55 and 70, here are some things which affect how you view the world and your beliefs. You grew up in a post-war world, totally different world, characterized by victory and affluence, unprecedented economic growth, abundance of consumer goods. Your parents' desire was, and it was said millions of times over, "I'm going to give my kids all the things I wanted and couldn't have." And they did a good job. Consumerism targeted children. For the first time, kids were the ones who determined what was out and what was in. $100 million was spent on Davy Crockett hats and rifles and T-shirts and records in 1955. 20 million hula hoops in 1958. The Beatles and the Rolling Stones took the U.S. by storm. Bleeding mattress shirts, which your mother had to wash separately because they bled over everything in the washing machine. Bleeding mattress shirts with the Fruit Loop and Levi jeans. Ring a bell to any of you? Everyone catered to the children. And they knew, they grew up knowing that they could change the world, and they tried. They outvoted their parents in 1960 and elected John Kennedy with his vision of a new frontier. Martin Luther King fed dreams of remaking society. Sexual revolution, known as free love, recreational drugs, flower power. And then came Vietnam, draft dodgers. A shot rang out in Dallas. Another one in San Francisco, a third one in Memphis, and then a volley at Kent State. The heady vision of the early 60s gave way to disillusionment, even cynicism. The sheer numbers of those entering the workforce, all of a sudden, flower children realize, okay, we've got to find a way to make a living. And so they entered the workforce, and the sheer number of those entering the workforce led to fierce competition for significant jobs. Many had not taken education very seriously, in contrast to today, by the way, I might add. Debt and credit cards exploded. Moral and family values declined. And if you're between the ages of 30 and 55 years old, here are some things that affect how you view the world and your beliefs. Your world is also different. Some of the events are long gasoline lines, parents who are divorced, near disaster at Three Mile Island, terrorism, hostages, abortion, Star Wars defense system, the shuttle explodes, Chernobyl. Some of the social changes. Many, if not most, grew up in a two-parent working home, if not a one divorced parent home. Daycare, latchkey kids, home alone, overcrowded schools? Do I choose family or do I choose career? Family life radically changed from a generation before. Many of you are more serious-minded than your parents were. Between 1967 and 1982, the percent of undergraduate students pursuing degrees in literature, history, and foreign languages dropped by almost 70%. In the early 80s, nearly 24% of college students majored in business, 2.5 times more than in 1972. And if you're younger than 30, and I realize that I'm picking up speed as we go along, for the sake of time, but if you're younger than 30, here are some things that affect how you view the world and your beliefs. But I got this particular section from the National Athletic Trainers Association Journal that posted identifying characteristics of what they call millennials. That would be the group that is roughly the current college students and those recently out of college. They produce 7 general characteristics of the millennial student, and I put that in somewhat as a disclaimer of my own. Number one, it said they feel they're special. This generation is comprised of students who've been taught that we're all winners just for participating. Millennials are sheltered. Their life has been built around the schedule of their parents, with very little free time. They're team-oriented. They're not very comfortable working alone or working independently. They're highly optimistic, but they're not very clear about how to reach a level of success if they're so confident that they'll attain. They have been technologically stimulated throughout their entire childhood and demand a high level of connectivity at all times. They feel pressured. They thrive on constant feedback and become paralyzed, often unable to proceed forward without feedback or direction. They have a strong desire to achieve. They're peacekeepers, tolerant of differences, and more accepting of a wide spectrum of cultures than any other generation alive today. Now, just an observation. When a society is relatively stable, then a simple way of saying it is children are more prone to accept the advice from their parents. And what their parents taught them and what their parents said to them proves to be true and valuable in adulthood. But whenever society is changing rapidly and radically, the process of elders passing along traditional values to the younger generation tends to be undermined. We can see that today. The children look to their peers for cues rather than to their parents. Cues of how to think and how to live, and tend to reject parental advice because it's so outdated. That's always tends to be true with young people, but it tends to be more radically true when society is changing radically. 3 generations live side by side in our world at any given time, sometimes even 2 on the fringes, 4 generations. They view things differently through our own framework. We see different possibilities, different limitations, different solutions. We accept different things as right and wrong. The church has 2 challenges. Number one, to effectively reach our world with the gospel. And that's going to take some creativity. And secondly, to incorporate every generation into a loving, effective, healthy, spiritual family. And that takes lots of challenge also, doesn't it? When you have such a wide variety of views within a family, a church family, it all starts with the same realization, and it should be apparent by now. Everybody has their own filter. You got your filter from input, physical input, in the early years of your life. And that, to a large degree, forms how you feel and think about things. And the next line is, all of our filters are inadequate at best, inaccurate at worst. All of ours, yours as well as mine. The world does not have the answers. It never will have the answers because its solutions are formulated from ever-changing physical conditions. Each generation, at least to some degree, rightly rejects the solutions of the previous generation. And all of this is apart from God and the Bible. Now enter God and the Bible. It changes everything. All of a sudden, we have a new filter. A filter through which we view the world. Either the Bible is true or it's not true. If it's not true, throw it away. If it is true, then it claims to be a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. It's not the path. It is the light to show us the path, to teach us how to think and how to live and how to act and how to react. And it is not within man that walks to direct his own steps. Every single one of our filters is wrong. And the only way that we can know for certain when we come to the end of our life, if we're in a right relationship with God and have a secure eternal future, is that we've let God change our filter. And that enables us to offer the world something that the world desperately needs. Truth. It enables us, it gives us a basis for unity in the church that we cannot otherwise have. A high regard for truth in the Bible. And even though we will always have things that we think differently about. I mean, the apostle Peter, he had great difference with the one that he took on his first missionary journey, didn't he? And when it came time for the second one, they had such sharp disagreement that they said, okay, you go your way, I'll go my way. But they still were in unity, weren't they? Even though they had disagreements about things. And so God's word provides us the basis of bringing together Jew and Gentile, the Greek, every single phase, every single part of society who wants to please God. And we have the basis for that. The only real solutions to problems are from God, and God changes our filter. There's an old song that says, bring Christ your broken life, so marred by sin. He will create anew, make whole again. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, today is a really, really good day. God spared your life to be here. And if you need to repent of sin in your life or come to Jesus to become a Christian, or you need to confess sin in your life, or you need the prayers of brothers and sisters, won't you come while we stand and sing?
Years I spent in vanity.